Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 4, Episode 1 of Mind Clickers, where for the very first time this year, it's time to click both heads in 2023. Today, I am joined here by absolute super coach of the EU RLCS scene, previous professional player turned coach, Mr. Snasky. How you going, brother?
We're going all right. How about you?
I'm doing well. I hope that was an intro. Was it an okay one?
Sort of. Yeah, it was all right. Sounded a bit scripted, but...
No, not scripted. Not at all. How's everything been? How's everything been over at Quadrant, and how have the boys been recently?
Everything's been good. I mean, obviously, we had a really good result in split one, I think, from everybody's expectations, maybe even for our own expectations. So
yeah,
everything's been good, and I think now we're in a position that's a bit strange because, like, suddenly you went from, like, no expectations, really, or, like, from having nobody expecting anything of you to suddenly you're in a position where you expected certain things.
And yeah.
It's been a bit of a strange thing to deal with or to figure out.
Mm.
So right now we're just trying to navigate the waters, really, to figure out, like, what is the difference between those two scenarios. And
yeah.
It's only really been Wave that's actually been used to be in this position, whereas the rest of us, me included, for a long time has been used to, like, having to navigate the underdog story.
Mm.
Now suddenly we have to navigate a completely different story, and so we're just still trying to figure that out. But, like, overall, like, it's been very fun and good, and I think overall we're pretty happy, all of us.
Yeah, well, no, that's definitely the experience that you want. And, you know, obviously with, you know, when you first get into teams, there is going to be that sort of a, you know, initial period, I think. But then you start to sort of iron out the sheets and everything starts to make a bit more sense. But it definitely seems like you're settling well, you know, over there. And, you know, that's always a good thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
For sure. All right. So I guess we'll do is for the episode, to just to sort of give everyone listening a bit of a mental mind map of how this is going to go down, we'll start a bit wide. So we'll go about, you know, sort of your background, how you got into esports, gradually talk about, you know, how you were a player, and then transition into a coach and sort of have a bit of a segment at the end for some of the viewers as well. Step into the time machine, take us back. How did gaming, how did esports come around for you?
I mean, gaming has always been, like, a big thing, mainly because I didn't have any older siblings or anything like that that would, like, play video games. But my granddad used to go, like, to, I forgot the word for it, like, you know, those garbage slots where people throw away all their garbages and stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
And they had, like, an electronics section, and he would go into the electronics section and he would pick up, like, computer parts.
Yeah.
And he would, like, find the working ones, and eventually he would build a computer. So he would just hand out computers to everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, this was, like, back in the early 2000s. Like, yeah, you know, early 2000s. So, like, back when computers were still a rare breed, basically.
Yeah.
And eventually I got one, and I got into playing, like, Doom. Like, back when it wasn't even CDs, it was, like, small square discs or discs or whatever. Like, it was, like, one level at a time.
Yeah.
And I got into Doom, and I just couldn't stop playing it. And yeah, just continued from there. And, you know, I got Game Boy, PlayStation, like everybody else. And then eventually League of Legends came out in, like, what, 2009?
Mm-hmm.
I jumped on that immediately, played that for, like, 4 years straight.
Yeah.
And I became extremely competitive in that. And I really wanted to be a professional League of Legends player.
Really? Okay.
But I was, like, 13 or 14 at the time when the LEC or LCS, whatever it's called back then, came out.
Mm.
And they had a rule that you had to be 17. So I was not going to sit around for that long and wait.
Yeah.
So then I moved over to Counter-Strike and, you know, play a lot of Faceit and play with some friends and travel to some local LANs here in Denmark and... You know, like, I played against a lot of the now pro Danish players, like, back in the day when they were all 12 and stuff.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, so I've always, like, really liked to compete no matter what the game is. And then after CS, when I realized that wasn't going to be anything, I kind of gave up. Like, I was just like, okay, I'm too old for this now. Like, at that point, I was, like, 19, 20.
Mm.
And I was like, this is not going to happen anymore. Like, I'm just going to move on to, like... get my education like everybody else and just move on.
Mm.
And here in Denmark, it's very common that after high school, you have like a gap year before you go to university or college to, you know, save up some money.
Right.
So you have money while you're studying. So while I was doing that, Rocket League came out.
Okay, here we go.
Just like, and I was working at a casino as a dealer. Right. And I was just playing Rocket League part-time, and I just ran into this guy called the LMP and ranked in Rocket League, and he was like, wow, you're actually quite good for someone who only has like 150 hours in this game or whatever.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, okay, I guess. And then I don't even quite remember all the small details, but somehow I ended up in a team in Rocket League, and yeah, here we are like 7 years later.
7 years later with a career.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not quite sure, like, everything that happened, it just happened so quickly. And yeah, I mean, I've always loved competing. I think now that I've gotten a bit older, it's definitely fizzled down a bit compared to when I was younger.
Yeah,
which I think is, you know, normal. But I always loved competing, so it was just natural to me. Like, it just happened. I can't really describe it better than that, but like, yeah, I'd sort of given up, and then everything just came all at once. And
yeah,
now we're here.
Yeah, I mean, you can sort of vow your competitive sense towards creating your career in that sense, right? Because do you think that if you were more of a casual gamer and sort of had aspects of when you were like recreationally playing, that you might not have taken the steps and taken the different challenges of, hey, this is a team, you know, let's try this out, or, you know, what can this be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Because if you look at ELMP, for example, like, I'm not sure if you're aware who he is, but he was like he played the previous version. I always forget the name, but he played Saab, right? So he was really good, but he never had any intention of turning that into a career.
Right.
So I played with him until season two of RCS, and after season two, I split ways with him.
Mm.
But he told me the entire way through that as soon as he couldn't study next to playing, that he would quit playing.
Right.
And, you know, that's the difference, was that for me, it was like I never had that intention of going back to studying now that I had playing, but for him, it was the opposite.
Mm.
And I think that is what you said. Like, it wasn't my true nature to really compete back then. And no, I don't think I would have been here, because otherwise I would have gone the other way as he did. I would have gone back to studying. I would have had a normal job by now.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have gone this deep, and I wouldn't have stuck around for so long, because it's not like people think that playing video games is the best job in the world. But like, whenever it's your job, it's something completely different.
Definitely.
It's not the same. It was my competitive nature that definitely carried me this far.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, definitely. You bring up a really interesting point there in the end, though, in regards to like how long is it reasonable to try and pursue a career in esports, do you think? Because surely you get to a point and it's like, hey, you know, maybe I've, you know, seriously got to consider something else. But, you know, maybe you've seen that image before. It's like the miner digging for gold, and it's like he's like this close towards getting it, and then he turns around. So it's like, is there sort of things we can base our experience on that sort of has a generalized prediction towards maybe that we can create a career out of this? Or is it going to be sort of like I just can't do it?
I mean, I think it's impossible to say, because I think anyone could break through. Like, there's endless of good examples of people who I thought would never become anything in Rocket League, and the next day they're one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
I don't think there is a limit. I think it's a very like personal, individual thing. How far you're willing to go to really dive into this.
Yeah.
And for me, after, you know, I really wanted to be a professional in the league. I was like, okay, there's age restrictions. Okay, so I can't do that, or I have to wait 3 years or 4 years, however long it was back then.
Mm.
Then I went into CS, and I was like, okay, there was probably more of like a skill issue. I was just like, I hadn't put enough time into it, and was I really willing to put that much time into it compared to what other people are willing to?
Mm.
And with Rocket League, it obviously just happened because it was a new game. But I don't think there is like I think it is an individual thing whether you're willing to put in the time and effort, but there's obviously also a talent aspect to it.
Mm.
And that's what I was trying to get at, is that I think in League of Legends I definitely had the talent.
Yeah.
But I wasn't willing to put in the time. And in CS I probably didn't have the talent, but I was a bit more willing to put in the time at that point. So there's like two different aspects to it. And like some people would argue that like talent and you know, the time that you spend in it, you know, you can work really hard and you can, you know, you don't have to be talented at something. But yeah, I would say that like once you get to the top level of anything, like there has to be a certain level of talent. You can't just take anyone and give them 10,000 hours in Rocket League and they'll become as good as, you know, Astro are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a thing. So it really depends on the individual. Like, do you think you have the talent to do it? And are you willing to put in the time for it? Like, that's really what it comes down to in my books. And then it might not even work out because it's such a small percentile of players that is actually able to compete at this level.
Exactly.
So it's really hard to tell, man. Like, I don't think there is any good way to predict if someone is going to become good, because Astro is actually a really good example. Like, I remember when Astro came up, it was like towards the end of my playing career. And we ran into this guy in ranked. Like, I was still playing a bit, and you know, this was before I transitioned into coaching. And when I met him in ranked, I was just like, wow, this guy is an idiot. Like, he's just ball chasing, like,
yeah.
Holy moly, this guy will never become anything. He has no brain, he doesn't understand the game whatsoever. Boom. Like, 6 months later, I was on Dignitas as a coach, basically telling my players, this guy is the best in the world. Like, he will become the best in the world. Like, please. Yeah. You know, so from it switches so quickly. But yeah, my answer is basically just, I have no idea. If there's no way to predict it.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of effort and talent, really.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting thing, because I sort of think about it. You know, you look at Rocket League and you look at sort of, you know, it's a widespread topic, right, the terms of sort of entry level. And you sort of look at Rocket League, where we have pro players that are 15, 16, 17. And then you look at Counter-Strike, where pro players are 25, 26, 27. There's a large age discrepancy. So is it a matter of, you know, I guess when we get to a certain age in Rocket League, is that when we can hang up the sticks? Because obviously it's proven in terms of, you know, cognitive fatigue and all these extra things in Counter-Strike that it can go further. So is it, you know, what do you think are some of the limitations when it turns to, you know, getting older in terms of Rocket League?
Yeah, I've been asking myself this question for quite a while, because I don't think there should be an age like restriction. Like, I don't think, like, I don't. It's a confusing topic, because you would think that in Rocket League, like, as you get older, and I think this is like proven in Counter-Strike, that the older, more mature players are like, quote unquote, the smarter players.
Yeah.
The guys with all the experience, with all the knowledge about the game. That's why you see like the most talented players will turn into in-game leaders in CS. But in Rocket League, it seems to be the opposite way. It's like the older you get, I guess you become too smart. Like, that's what I've settled on, at least, is that, like, you almost start overthinking.
Overthinking, yeah.
And every, like, Rocket League is so fast-paced to the point where almost everything is, like, made out of habits and reactions and adapting. And in CS, it's quite the opposite, right? It's about, like, really thinking through every situation.
Yeah.
Unless you're in that moment. Like, if you're in a 1v3 clutch, obviously, you can't be thinking, oh, no, he's going to go there. Oh, no, you just got to do it, right?
Yeah.
But that's basically what Rocket League is at all times. It's just, like, a reaction to your teammates, a reaction to your opponents, and, like, adapting to all of that. But if you start overthinking it, then it becomes pretty much impossible for you to play, which is interesting.
Yeah,
because that's definitely something that I've had to deal with a lot as a coach, because like, what can you really analyze in a game where everything is based off the player's reactions? Like, what do you really work on then? And you know, I've just come to terms with the fact that you have to work on, you know, their habits, their reaction to things. Like, you gotta basically like go over the same thing so many times that reaction will be instant, or that it'll become a habit. It's just something they do instantly. They don't even have to think about it. But yeah, to go back on topic, I don't think there should be an age restriction. I'm sure that we'll see some players having, you know, a longer career than in the past. I think another thing to remember is that the game is like really new, and a lot of like us old guard pros became pros on accident. Like we didn't plan to become pros, and it was not something we strive for. And but now you have kids that are literally growing up with Rocket League just to become pros, it's all they want. So I think you can easily see like some of this new, like these newer generations, like last into their like mid 20s and so like in CS, but it is sort of like guarded by the fact that they can't start overthinking, which I kind of think is a natural consequence of growing older.
Yeah.
Is that you start being more, you know, you start thinking more about consequences. Oh, what happens if I lose this series? What happens if I lose this game? Because I need my salary for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise I can't stay in this apartment, or, you know, my girlfriend really wants a new car, whatever, right? Like when you're 17, you don't really worry about all this.
No.
You're just like, oh, I got to go to school tomorrow, so I can only play until 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, damn, my mom didn't make my dinner. You know, like,
there's not enough ice creams in the fridge left. Oh, heck. You know, you make a really good point as well, because, you know, I remember sort of reflecting back when I had the episode with Appjack, now Mr. Gen G Jack, and we talked about school and this decision that people make to pursue a professional esports career versus going the traditional route of going to school. And, you know, that's a big decision within itself, right? Because if all of a sudden you're dedicating 3 or 4 years to Rocket League, which could have been sort of the quintessential same as a degree, right? And then Rocket League doesn't work out and all of a sudden it's not something that's pursuable. Was it worth it, sort of thing? And you can sort of look at it from different perspectives in terms of experience, in terms of that sort of interpersonalized growth, I think, that you can sort of come from working in a team that's so close knit that you can sort of maybe develop transferable skills into a different career, right? But I guess that's the real question, you know, sort of, because, like, you know, especially within Australia and a few other countries, I know that universities obviously adopting esports programs, right? CRL, we've got it all. So it's sort of being integrated into the culture now. But, you know, I sort of reflect back 5-10 years ago, and that culture wasn't there. There wasn't like high schools or universities with leagues and stuff like that. It's becoming a lot more adaptable now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in Denmark, at least, it's been a huge part. Like, I've been invited onto schools to talk about Rocket League and a professional esport career.
Really?
I've been invited so many places. Yeah, because they have these lines in high school now that you can take. It's kind of like sports. Like, if you're really good at football, they will adapt their schedule around their football, like even when you're in high school. So when you're like 17, 16, and they'll do the same with esport now. Like, if you're really interested in esport and you have the talent for it, they will scout you and they'll bring you to their school. So you have time to really, you know, dive into it. And they invite people to talk about, you know, being a professional and all this. But the only issue I have with this is that I think it takes away experience from young people that they need. I think that entitlement is a big issue in Rocket League.
Yeah.
A massive issue. Like, almost every team that I've ever dealt with has had some kind of entitlement issues. And it's like, I can remember it myself. You know, when I was 18, like, I was an entitled little shit. Like, I was really bad. I thought the world revolved around me. And, you know, it wasn't until I got that job at the casino that I truly realized that I'm just as replaceable as the guy next door to me. And this is something that, you know, original sports has this automatically, as you have a substitute sitting right there ready to take your spot if you don't show up and if you don't do your job. But in Rocket League, you have such a small, and especially when I was a pro, like, there was such a small percentile of people that could actually compete to the point where we just felt like we could do whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously you saw a switch at some point where the young guns were all coming out, they were working way harder than we did, and we all fell behind immediately. There's like a handful of pros left from that time. But yeah, it's been a threat that I've been joking the guys with on the team whenever I feel like they're a bit too entitled. I'm like, I'm going to take you guys to McDonald's for a week. And we're going to work at McDonald's for a week and you guys will see how fucking great you have it here.
Yeah, no, like, that's honestly true. True to words.
Yeah, that's my biggest issue with all these young guys coming up. It's just that I think that they're going to lack some real life experience that, you know, could come back and haunt them at some point. And I think, but that, I think again, like that's a part of our job as coaches is to like really help them understand how, you know, privileged we are to work in a space like this, to do what we do for a living, to travel around the world, you know, like really put that into perspective for them by telling, you know, probably our stories or like even ask their parents about their stories. Because they realize pretty quickly how neat it is to play Rocket League for a living.
Yeah, it's very, very niche. And I use the age-old sort of comparison. You know, you look to traditional sports where you have a football team or a rugby team and, like, how many people are on that team? Like 10, 15, 20 people, right? So there's a lot of opportunity. But you look at a Rocket League team and how many people make up a team? Three people and a coach. Yeah. And so it's, I feel like the barrier to entry to become a pro almost in that sense is so much more harder. Because, you know, as you said just then, you can be easily replaceable or you can sort of get switched out. And I guess that comes down to it. You know, look at even other games, CS and League of Legends, Dota, Rainbow Six. All these games are encompassed with five players on a team, whereas Rocket League, it's three players. So do you think that specifically within Rocket League, creating such a strong, key, positive team environment is a quintessential thing for success because all of a sudden you've just got three people to sort of bounce back. It's like a triangle. And that's the sort of metaphor I use with my boys that, you know, we are like a triangle and we can sort of reflect on each other and we can sort of bounce ideas off each other and also moods as well, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's a huge – like Rocket League is not – like it's not comparable to any other esport because it's only three people.
Yeah.
Like even if you have four people, like you can have two people that are happy with each other and you can have two people that are like – you know, you can make your own little cliques and you can still stay happy.
Yeah.
And you can work with someone. Like we – at the casino, I didn't like everybody. But I liked a few of them, so that was good enough for me, you know? Like, I was happy working with those guys and could ignore the rest and just, like, coexist with them. But in Rocket League, you can't do that because it's only three people. And if the coach and a player do it and two players do it, like, then that just creates, like, a really bad imbalance in the team because the coach do have, like, more of a say. Like if I listen more to one player than I do to other players, it's going to create a huge imbalance in the team. So Rocket League is in a very unique position in that regard that like you have to be on good terms, everybody, but not only outside the game, but also inside the game because you make up 33% of a team. Whereas in CS, you make up like, it's like 20%, right?
Yeah. Not good quick maths. I love that. It's good for you.
Like, so the difference between 20% and 33%, right? If you take one player out of the team in CS compared to Rocket League, it's a 13% gap. Like, it's a massive gap.
Yeah.
The change is going to be huge in Rocket League, and it's going to be, I wouldn't say insignificant in CS, but it's like, it's like it's not as big of a change, right? It's definitely like you can probably swap out a player on a top CS team with another top player and they'll just function fine.
Yeah.
Whereas in Rocket League, like if you combine certain three peoples, it won't be the same. Like you can have an absolute top team and then take out one player. Like we saw it a bit in the beginning with BDS, right? When they replaced Mark, when they replaced Mark with Seiko. Seiko is obviously also an extremely talented player.
Yeah.
But they struggled a bit in the beginning. So, like the dynamics between the players, the dynamic between the players and the coach, like all this is like so increasingly important in Rocket League compared to any other experience I have with like sports or esport in general. And that is probably like the biggest obstacle that I've had to go through in Rocket League is like navigating that as a coach because it's you can't really tell people to just like each other and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
They sort of have to figure it out themselves and you can sort of like nudge them in the right directions, but you can't really force it. And I would say that that is like the majority that like when you see a team break up in Rocket League, this is probably the main reason most of the time is that people have fallouts.
Yeah.
And it can be due to people like not being happy with how they're playing. But like, how are you going to reflect on people that you're not satisfied with how they play? Like, you're going to take it outside the game. You're going to be like, oh, this idiot, he's throwing my games. Like, you know, I don't like this guy. And it becomes like a whole big deal. And that's why most teams will end up breaking apart. Or that's why you see so many roster changes in Rocket League. is because this happens so quickly. If you're not number one in the world, you start looking at the teammate that you feel like is dragging you down, and then it's all gonna, yeah, it's just a bad spiral of bad events all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that sort of stimulates the question, which is probably, you know, quite a controversial one in regards to sort of this idea of super teams. And I guess the comparison between maybe three friends or three players who are really close friends, and they have the chemistry and they have the synergy versus a super team where they have three top players. So you take three top players from the top three teams, and you sort of mix them together. What team wins in the end? And most importantly, what team lasts in the end? Because I think chemistry is such an important thing, like you've mentioned, and being able to have almost, you know, what we pretty much call a culture, right? And a culture whereby we sort of maintain ourselves, especially at LAN. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, sort of V1 with Com. You know, he has a very aggressive culture in regards to his performance at LAN. He wants to be the person yelling. He wants to be in someone's head. And does that mix with the rest of V1? Is that sort of the culture that they've adapted to and understood and almost appreciated in that regard? But then also some things can't mix sometimes. So, you know, it's sort of this balance of, do you play with people that you really just get along with? But then what happens if there's a skill issue involved there as well?
Well, I think there's actually proof to this. I think if you think about the top performers, like the people with the longest career at the top of their region, I think almost no matter where you go, you'll find that they've been together for the longest. Like, so you have like Garrett and Justin.
Yeah.
You have like Chicago and JNaps. You have, but I mean, there's obviously a mix of both, right? But you have like, you had Mark and Monkey Moon have been together for a long time.
Yeah.
You had Kate off Fairy Peak for a while. You had, Panda Turbo, even K-Dot Panda Turbo, they were together for 2.5 years or something, all three of them. Like the teams with the most success usually has been has had a duo that has probably brought this vibe up and usually comes with a coach along it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously like G2 has had Safu for a long time, and I'm sure Safu is just as great friends with JNaps in Chicago as, you know, they are with each other.
Yeah.
And so I think there's some proof in the pudding, but there's definitely also super teams, right? Like there's also someone like FaZe that comes in and just pick up three incredible players and then they turn out great. Like for our team, I've been playing Valorant with Wave for a long time. You know, me and Ixo has been on a team for 2 years. You know, Ixo and Wave and Cash has all known each other because they're from the UK. So like everybody knows each other. So it's always been like really good vibes. Like, obviously, we've had our issues, like every team will, but generally speaking, it's good vibes because all of us are friends. Like, the only people that didn't really know each other that well was me and Cash, and we've just gotten on great since we started teaming, so there's no issues. But I think there is some proof to, like, longevity of duos, and if you have a really good friend or if you're really good friends in your team, that you are, like, more likely to succeed.
Yeah.
But obviously, there's a ceiling to that depending on talent, right?
Like, yeah.
You need to have certain levels, but I think that you can go through more if you're really good friends. You can easily accept if a teammate has a bad, you know, regional or whatever. You can, if you're just like three top players that don't know each other that well and someone plays bad, it's pretty easy to just see them as like a, you know, like almost like a character in your world. And you're just like, oh yeah, this guy's terrible, out with him and in with the new one, right?
Yeah.
I think that's like a result of what FaZe had. It's like they don't really get to know each other from the outside. I don't know this, but from the outside, it seems like they're just, you know, co-workers. They're just dealing with each other. As soon as someone doesn't perform, out with them. And that's not, I mean, it can work for sure, but I don't think like longevity-wise, it won't work.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've sort of been reflecting about like other esports and sort of the synergy and the balance that they involved in regards to sort of, you know, team environments and team culture. And I think that Rocket League, it definitely sticks out as being one that's so diverse but also so difficult to navigate as well. And I sort of think about, you know, when I joined Renegades, and initially, you know, straight off the bat, there was definitely a synergy between CJ and Kami, right? And mm-hmm. then it was sort of my role as a coach to help Fever feel integrated in that role and sort of help him to adapt to what was, you know, that bantery, fun, high energetic environment and sort of what that meant as a player as well. And I think, you know, the success of that led to us being quite successful in the long run. But it's, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen. And I think that it's also important to sort of consider when that doesn't happen, you know, are you just going to try and brute force it? Are you going to brute force it? Or, you know, when is it okay to sort of accept, okay, maybe this isn't the right balance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely been something I was like, as I said earlier, I think it's the majority of teams that end up like kicking someone or splitting up or whatever it is, it's because of this. Like it's because there is no synergy between the players outside of the game.
Yeah.
Like on the field, they can be great. Like there's very few examples of teams that has not been great friends outside of the game, but done really well in Rocket League. And the opposite is also true. There's been a lot of teams that has been great friends and done really well in Rocket League.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to navigate that. It's so hard to figure out, like, how do you actually force people to become friends? Like, at this point in my career, I've been on, like, five teams, six teams as a coach now, and I think, yeah, probably, like, four or five of them has fallen apart because of what we're talking about.
Mm.
And I would say the Quadrant is the first team that I'm actually on where I with full chest can say that, yes, everybody is friends.
Mm.
And that's why I believe in the longevity of this team. But the rest of them, like, at a certain point, you do just give up. Like, because you can't force it. There is no way that you can make two people that is not similar become similar.
Yeah.
Like, sure, there might be some people out there who are driven enough and competitive enough to really change themselves for another person. But it's so rare. Like, usually people are just like, no, I'm just great at Rocket League. I won't change. I'll just find a team that's better suited for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll keep looking. And that's why you see certain players just jump from team to team, is because they're still looking for those people that they actually gel with. And some, you know, there is outliers in gaming. There is people that just don't gel that well with other people. And unfortunately for them, it's just a huge part of Rocket League. If they had gone pro in any other game, I think they would have been perfectly fine just being incredible at the game. But in Rocket League, it is a big deal. So, yeah, it's a rough one. It's one I've been struggling with my entire career. And but at this point, I think that, like, I'm pretty stern on the fact that, like, you can't force it. It's like, you can definitely help, and especially if it's younger people, right? Like, if it's a 15-year-old or 16-year-old, you can definitely help mold them into someone that teammates will like, or, you know, help them grow and mature to the point where, you know, they are more suitable for teams. But if you're getting a 20-year-old or a 21-year-old, like, you're not going to change that person. They've already, like, been through that, you know, grow-up stage of their life. Like, if someone came to me now and told me that I had to change the way I was completely, I'd also tell them to, you know, get out of here. Like, that's not going to happen. I know who I am, and I'm very comfortable with who I am, and people should be okay with who they are, but that is just the consequence of, you know, being in Rocket League and being the way you are, like, doesn't always match with everyone, and that's fine.
For sure.
It's just whether you're okay with that. Like, if you can live with the fact that maybe Rocket League isn't for you, then if you can't find a team to where you really gel with them.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. One last thing before we get into sort of more of something I'm interested in, more of a mindset sort of stuff. I sort of want to add into the end of it. You know, I think one really key important consideration is the prevalence of a clock-in, clock-out culture, whereby if you have one player who's coming to scrims at the last minute and is like, okay, I'm here to scrim, there's no pre-gelling beforehand, there's no pre-bantering, there's no hanging out with each other. I come for scrims, I leave as soon as the scrim's done, I don't talk to you outside of scrims. And I think that can be a major disruptor for a team environment. If you have maybe two people on the team that are hanging out and maybe afterwards, you know, we just did 2 hours of scrimming, let's play some Apex together, let's play some, you know, another game together, let's sort of gel and create a relationship outside of Rocket League so that we can sort of use that as a motivator for internally into Rocket League. And I think that is a major consideration and a major important factor.
I mean, I completely agree. I mean, it's been something that I think most players I've had struggle with, at least like one person on every team I've had that has issue with this.
Mm.
Because it does really create that friendship bond. You know, if you play another game, if you just sit and chat, like if you watch, like yesterday we were just watching like some NA RCS together, you know, after scrims, and like Ixo went in to play ranked a bit and we were just sitting there like shit talking him while he was playing, you know, like, oh, you're such an idiot or whatever, right? Like all this is extremely important. But it's definitely also something to do with boundaries, I think. And that's a really hard thing in esports in general. It's like, do I pick up my call from my player at 2:30 in the morning? Like, do my player like get on Rocket League at 2:30 in the morning because he feel like he has to play more? And all that pressure kind of adds up, right? To a point, like when I was a player, the best example I can give is when I was a player and I quit playing, the moment I like tweeted out that I'm retiring from playing, I can't even describe the rock that I felt that left my chest. Because for 4 years, when I was a professional player, every single moment I wasn't playing Rocket League, I was always thinking to myself, oh, I could be spending this time playing Rocket League. I could be, you know, using this time to improve myself. And it would continue on and on for 4 years. And obviously that pressure builds on and that stress. And that's what these players go through every single day. That's what coaches go through every single day, because we just had a bad regional result. And I will constantly reflect back to the time leading up to that, being like, could I have done more? Like, could we have done more? Like, my players are probably doing the same thing, you know? And so it's a really hard balance to find boundaries within esport, but also like spending enough time with your team. And some people, and that's why I think friendship is so important, is because for some people it comes very natural. Like I would imagine that JNaps in Chicago, since they've been together for what, like 4 years or something now, they've probably been playing all the games together, right? Because to them, it's their friend, so they're just hanging out with them.
Yeah.
But for some other people, it's their job to hang out with them, so that becomes a stress factor. And finding a balance in all that is... I still haven't figured it out, and I'm like 7 years deep at this point in this career, so... I still don't know how to truly do it. It's a really hard balance to find. And yeah, I think that's something that you learn as you go along, that you definitely need boundaries. Like there's definitely some times where my players is like, can you call? And I'll be like, no, I can't right now because, you know, I'm with my family and I need some time to just think about something else other than Rocket League. And that is one of my biggest worries with these kids coming into Rocket League, or like being in Rocket League, they're already here. But
yeah.
Is that like how, if I can't figure it out, I would say that I'm, you know,
quite a
bit more mature and I've been in this for a while. Like if I can't figure this out, like I'm not comfortable with people who've just like head dived into it to figure it out. And I'm worried about the fact that when they become a bit older, how will that affect them? In what way? Like, will they just be perma-stressed? Well, they have to quit playing because they're stressed all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like it can have severe consequences for these guys' life, like for the rest of their life. And that's like my biggest worry about all this.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And I think that's a really nice segment to sort of lead into, which I was thinking about, because I think it's a super interesting sort of aspect to being a player and then transitioning into a coach. Because say, for example, myself, I played Rocket League, you know, a couple of times on the mouse and keyboard, and then I suddenly I'm coaching, you know, one of the top teams in OCA. So I didn't have the same experience as you did to sort of come into this scene and sort of bring these skills. So, you know, when I stand behind the boys at a major or I stand behind the boys at Worlds, you know, I can't visualize what it's like to be in the seat and feel the stress and feel the pressure on my back, knowing that I'm two goals down. It's game seven and I've got a minute left on the clock. I don't have that internal pressure, but you've had that experience. You've had that experience of what it feels like to be back against the wall, what it feels like to have that internal stress. And, you know, throughout those times, how did you manage it? You know, what was it like as a player for you to sort of cope and deal with that? And how did you?
That's a great question. I'm not sure, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think like at a certain point you get used to it. Like as I said, like when I stopped playing, I've never thought about the fact that I was stressed. But when I quit playing, like the moment I tweeted, I could easily tell how stressed I've been for so long.
Yeah.
And I think that's what players are navigating now. It's like they don't realize how much pressure and stress they're under until suddenly it becomes too much. And, you know, but it's the same in any workspace. You don't really realize what you're doing to yourself until it's over or until it's too late. But yeah, sitting in those moments, like I loved it. I didn't feel pressure in those moments. It was like every other moment. When I was competing, I was fine.
Right.
That was everything, because that's what you work towards. That's what you're playing for. So that's like that's like heaven on earth, you know. Like that's what you're there for, and you love that. Well, at least I did. I can only speak for my own, but like that's what I love. Like sitting on stage in front of people, having people come up to me and talk to me. Like that's what I worked hard for. But it was like every moment outside of that. And I would say that when I sat on stage and I was about to lose or I was losing, I wouldn't really think of it like that. I was, you can call me old or whatever, but I was more like just taking it all in, just enjoying everything, you know.
Sure.
And that could also be a difference between someone who's like 21 and someone who's 16, right? The 16-year-old would smash his controller, you know, be mad, like frustrated. And me, I was just happy I was there, you know. Like, I don't know. So I mean, that I don't know how I dealt with it, like specifically, like. I don't remember that part of my career. I was just, I don't know. I was just happy being there. I don't know. I wish most people would feel this way, because I think that's how you get furthest. I think if you keep adding pressure on yourself and being stressed and thinking about consequences, like you will never get anywhere. But if you're just happy to be there, if you're just like relaxed, like it's this whole like, and again, like the funny thing is that I think you and I come from like complete opposite backgrounds. Yeah. I was the player and you know all the mental side, right?
Yeah.
And as we're coaching, like we have to like kind of cross over and like learn each other's role. And like the more I've coached, the more I know about the mental. Oh, I'm learning about the mental side. And the more you're coaching, obviously, the more you learn about Rocket League, probably.
Definitely.
So it's interesting for me to reflect back to when I was a player, because I was a piece of shit. Like, I was not... If I had a coach, I would not... Like, he would not have been happy with me.
Oh, okay.
It's funny to reflect back on, like, some of the stuff now. With the knowledge I have now with, like, how you're a good teammate or, you know, how important is team synergy or... You know, like how many different perspectives there is to Rocket League in general. Like if someone came in and just told me all this, I would definitely have just disregarded it all and been like, I know better. I'm the player.
Yeah.
But you can't have that, obviously. That's a terrible mindset.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think that's maybe, you know, one of the mindsets that maybe sometimes players can adapt. It's sort of like they might look at, I guess, someone like myself, for example, and it's like, well, you haven't played Rocket League before. What would you understand and what would you know? But I think there's a lot more to put into consideration that is sort of the key to success rather than just 100% knowing Rocket League. There's a lot more that obviously goes into it. But I think on the grand scheme of things, it's just so interesting to sort of look at that perspective, but then also look at the perspective of sort of those growing up within the scene and looking at other people and how they perform and their success, and then sort of taking inspiration based on that. And then sort of fixating that into their own mindset and think, well, I'm putting in 200 hours, not 200 hours, I'm putting in, you know, 50 hours or 60 hours or 70 hours. Why aren't I reaching that level? Why aren't I striving and why aren't I succeeding in that same way? And I think that's where, especially within esports, you develop maybe even jealousy. The fact of I'm putting in so much work, this other person's putting in 20, 30 hours less than I am and they're having more success. And that's maybe a difficult thing to balance mentally as well, right?
Yeah, it's actually funny you say that, because I was just talking to Ixo yesterday about like the different, like when does it become talent, and like we touched on this earlier, right? But like it's such a hard thing to have to sit someone down and be like, this guy is just more talented, or like it's and that might not necessarily even be it. It could just be that he has found like a more efficient way to work.
Yeah.
Whereas you're just out here like playing a lot, but you're not efficient about it. But it could also just be talent. Or it could just be that he had better teammates around him. It could be he has a better coach to help him. Like it can be so many different factors. And to sit a player down and basically like tell him that like what he's doing or what the other guy is doing is better. It's when you don't know the answer to what it is that is better, it's such a hard concept to get your mind around. And especially if you're someone that puts everything into it. Like if you're out here doing, like feeling like you're working yourself tired, like you're just exhausted all the time from working.
Mm.
And then meanwhile, you see someone else, you know, like maybe put in less hours, you know, maybe he has worse teammates, but he's still doing better than you. Maybe he has a worse coach. He's still doing better than you, you know, like all this, like it's such a like hard concept to get your mind around, because how do you solve that?
Mm.
How do you just admit that you're not as good, or like is he just more talented than you, or do you give up? Like it's a paradox. Like you can't figure it out. Like you just can't figure it out. And the only thing you can really do is just like try your best. And it sounds like a very, you know, child-friendly way of saying, but all you can do is just try your best. Like try and be the most efficient you can. Try and surround yourself with the best people possible. Like no matter who, if you're your teammates, your coach, do everything in your power outside of Rocket League to make sure that you are in the best like physical conditions to perform. Because that's something that I've always focused a lot on. And, you know, I think all my past players will tell you how fucking annoying I am with like working out, exercising, eating healthy, getting 8 hours of sleep, you know.
Yeah.
It's a big focus point. But at the same time, you also keep getting proven wrong in this aspect. Like you have players that do none of this.
None
of
it.
Better.
Yeah.
Like literally, like I know Turbo very well.
Yeah.
Turbo has won 4 world championships, and my guy had like, he would never consider like exercising and all this. Like I tried on Dignitas.
Yeah.
And yet this guy is a 4-time world champion, right? So how am I supposed to tell my players that they're supposed to change their regime when they have living proof right here that this guy is not doing it and he's more successful? Like how am I supposed to change their mind about this will actually like benefit you whenever there's the opposite proof, right? And I think that's why it's a really complicated subject, because you never really know what they're doing right and wrong, from an outside perspective. And you'll only figure it out if you actually get to talk to them about like exactly what they're doing every single day.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it could just be talent. It could just be that they're just like naturally gifted at this game and there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm.
And that's just how it is. Like, why is Messi as good as Messi is in football, right? Like why is he so far ahead of everybody else? Why is Cristiano so far ahead of everybody? Like, do they work harder?
Yeah.
I would guess that there's probably people out there working just as hard as they are.
Definitely.
Like, do they just have incredible talent? There's probably people that were just as talented as they were at the game. But, you know, it's probably a mix of everything. Like a good family, like a good work ethic, like talent, like at the right coach at the right time, like, you know, it could be everything. So
literally,
you don't know. It's such a complex subject, and it's a hard subject to have with one of your players, I think, because you don't have a definitive answer for them, and yet they have to just live with that. And you know, I'm not good with that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not good at accepting that there's no answer to something. There
accepting
must be
that
an
your
answer
fate
somewhere.
Is zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And I guess one thing that sort of sprung to mind throughout of that was this whole idea of, you know, I've had a couple of chats with quite a few players about this now, and it's almost this idea of some players are living 2 weeks at a time, right? They perform in a regional, you know, they have a week, okay, another region's performing in a regional, all right, next week it's my time. And sort of they're taking this approach of just 2 weeks at a time, 2 weeks at a time. And I don't know if that's the right mindset to have towards the long growth, right? I think a lot of players focus on, okay, this major's ahead of me. I need to make sure I'm within the top 5 to qualify. I need to make sure that I'm doing this. And if I don't do that, then that's it, all right? But obviously there's other teams that I guess have – understood that they're not going to get there, right? There's other teams that are way better. Maybe we're talking about some bubble teams. We're talking about some teams that are, you know, maybe hard stuck, you know, top 10, you know, 12th, around that sort of area. And there's sort of a different mindset for some of these players whereby there's almost no expectation. Whereas for other players, there is an expectation that, yes, I'm this player, I need to make this major, and if I don't, then I'm shit, right? And is that probably more of a paralyzed mindset?
I would say so. Like my main focus as a coach for the past, like I say, at least 2 years, has been a lot more the longevity of their lives and their careers rather than like the team here and now. It's like you can fix certain things very quickly, like when it comes to Rocket League, but there's just stuff that takes a long time, like getting into shape, like eating healthy, have a healthy sleeping pattern. You know, all this stuff is something that takes an extremely long time. And I think that if you just go 2 weeks at a time, it would be very easy for me to just be like, okay, like I have this regional next week, so I won't work out for this week because, you know, like I need to be well rested. I need to, all this stuff. Like you can make excuses for yourself all the time if you have this mindset.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what makes it paralyzing, is that how can you get anything done in your life if that's what you revolve your life around?
Yeah.
A big thing for me that I've really worked with a lot of players on is like balancing your life with your career.
Mm.
Like Rocket League is obviously a massive part of everyone that's involved's life.
Yeah.
But it's not your life.
No.
If you lose in a regional, there's so many more things you can do. Like that you have your family that loves you, that you can talk to. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, whatever. And there's so much more to life than this. Yes, we all love it. We're all passionate about it. We want to win, like all this. But at the end of the day, when you're laying on your deathbed, are you really going to think back to a time you lost in a random regional?
Random regional, yeah.
Like, probably not, right? Like you're going to be thinking about like your grandkids or, you know, like your wife that died 10 years ago, whatever, right? Like you're going to think about what's important in life.
Yeah.
And realistically, Rocket League is very important right now to everybody who's involved.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, it's really not that deep. And I think if you get into this two-week mindset, you're making it out to be something that it's not. It is your career. It is important, but it's not your life.
Yeah.
And if you make it your life, I think you're like 10 times more like guaranteed a failure. Like you will like feel the pressure and build so much pressure on yourself to the point where you can't live in it and you can't compete in it. And you know, I think every player has been there at some point. Like me, myself, I moved to London. Like frankly, I had a girlfriend that lived in London as well. But I moved to London for Fnatic, for a tournament, for Rocket League.
Right.
So all I could do for those 6 months was just live Rocket League, be Rocket League. And like my mental was going absolutely insane in that period because we were losing. So I became mad. And since Rocket League was the only like place I had to go, like I went into Rocket League again, kept losing, got even more mad. And it's just like a never-ending spiral.
Yeah.
And that's what I think can happen if you're in this two-week, you know, if you think of it like 2 weeks. But you could also go the opposite way, right? Like you could also say like everything is going well. Like take Gen G in the last split. They were in every grand final, right?
Yeah.
So they live 2 weeks at a time. They go into Rocket League, they're happy. Scrims are going well. So they become more happy. And then, you know, they get into the regional, they get top two finish. That's great. We're happy, right? And then it can continue like that. So it can go two ways, but it's always going to be to one extreme. You can't have like that balance of like, it's okay to have a bad day of scrims and then the next day you're fine again. You will have that if you have a good life next to Rocket League or if you have a balance in your life. You can have that. I shouldn't say you will have that, but you can have that. Whereas, you know, with these two-week systems, like it's going to go to either extreme. There isn't going to be any in between with that, in my opinion. Like I've never lived like that, like specifically. So I can't really talk too much about
No, for sure, definitely. I think it's almost, you know, it's sort of this same similarity between people who work a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday and live for the weekend, right? It's sort of like I'm just gonna just chip away Monday. It's such a bad day. I'm gonna completely mentally switch off. I'm gonna disconnect. Even I'm gonna become like this maybe automatic process. But as soon as the weekend comes around, Friday night, you know, let's get ready. You know, that's what it's all about. Saturday, Saturday, Sunday, oh, the weekend's almost over, and then Monday it starts again. And I think that's almost an interesting comparison to make, right? But I think one of the biggest things that I was always also thinking about is for teams and players who are playing but don't have a coach, you know, obviously maybe that was quite common back then when maybe some teams didn't have a coach. So they didn't have an external guidance. They didn't have someone to sort of reconcile in. You know, if maybe they didn't have the strongest bond with their family, you know, and they didn't have that escape, you know, who are they to turn to and who are they to sort of have dialogues with if they don't have a coach or if they don't have an external figure, which is pretty tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like we didn't have coaches.
Yeah.
Period. Like when I joined Dignitas in, what was that? That was must have been season 7. So it's like early 2019. There was barely any coaches. Like I don't remember. I think there was a few already, but back then it was like more managers slash coach. Like maybe I think Gregan had a job back then on Vitality, and it was like a manager slash coach position where you're doing kind of both.
Yeah.
So I guess that works as well, right? But there wasn't many back then. And it was something that I quickly realized back then that's what's most needed for these young guys is that they don't really have anyone. Like most people go into gaming because they're like fleeing from something, right? Not fleeing, but like it's an escape from reality, really.
Definitely.
And like I had a good childhood, right? Like I just loved gaming, but I was definitely also sometimes using it as an escape from like situations in my life.
Yeah.
Even though I had a perfectly normal childhood. So you can imagine some guys have a really terrible childhood and they use it as a full-on escape. And who do they go to when they have these issues, like you said? And that was what I realized really early on when I started coaching, was that is probably the most impact you can have, not only like on their career, but also on their life, is that you can truly help these guys or these young guys become men and like help them mature and help them. And once you help them outside the game or help them mature and grow outside the game, it'll help them so much more in the game as well.
Definitely.
Because one of the biggest things that can change someone is them realizing that they can actually do something in their life. It's like, you know, getting someone into shape, help them into shape. They realize, oh, that was easy. That was not that hard. Like, it seems super complicated, but once I got going, it was super easy.
Yeah, once I got going, like,
what else can I do? I wonder, you know, maybe I can learn this new flip reset in Rocket League. Oh, that was super easy as well, you know?
Yeah. Like,
and suddenly the snowball just starts rolling. So it's, I think it's definitely something that, you know, when I was a player, I didn't even realize that should have been a thing. Like when we had internal issues in our teams, like we would just yell at each other until one of us got so mad that, you know, one of us left. And then the next day we'd show up like nothing had happened. And obviously all that would bottle up all over time. And that is probably the biggest difference between now and then, is that I think all these teams have, you know, coaches that can help them navigate through these arguments, help the players navigate through their life. And yeah, that's only a positive, right? Like there's no negative side to it, unless the coach is incompetent. Because I think then it can have the opposite effect on the players as well. Like,
yeah.
And how do you judge that? It's really hard. Like I can definitely look back in my own career as a coach and be like, oh, I should have handled that differently. Or okay, maybe I was the reason that this team didn't work out because I could have done that better. Or maybe I shouldn't have told this player to do this because now he's taken it the wrong way and now he's gone and fucked up his life even more. You know, like you have a huge amount of power over these players, and if the coach is incompetent, why do you struggle so much with that word? if the coach is incompetent, he can definitely do just as much harm as he can do good. And I think it is sort of a hard role to fill in, because you have an education in all this, right? So for you, it's what you've been passionate about for a long time. But for someone like me, it's just been treading the water, seeing like, where did I go wrong? Where did I go right? And you have no one to help you either, because who can, like the players can't really help you, like teach you how to be a coach. You can't really go to other coaches to help them or like
help the enemy
for help. Like,
yeah,
like you can't really go to another coach and be like, "Yo, I, what do you think of this way of playing?" Or I have this situation with my player, and like, how should I handle? Like, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
So it's a very lonely and hard road that coaches have to walk, and it's an interesting job.
Yeah. It's a tricky dynamic, and I was sort of thinking like how niche it is as well. Like we're coaching some kids, but we're coaching young adults drive around a pitch and play soccer or football. Sorry, guys. It's sort of a weird thing to explain to other people. Have you tried to do that before? Sort of explain what your job is and then explain what you do.
Yeah, but I think it was my mom that actually put it best, because my mom has been like working in management for all her life. And right. She's like, you're just managing. Like,
yeah,
you're basically just like, you're just these kids like manager, but you're closer to them, which is where it separates. It's like when you work in a normal office and you're managing people, you have to deal with people in different ways because people are different.
Yeah.
And this is only something I realized like not too long ago. Like obviously I had a feeling that like with some people I could joke about certain issues and some people I couldn't, right? And some people I could just walk up to and give them the straight facts and they would just take it with full chest, you know, and be like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Or like argue with me, and after an argument then that'll be settled. And some people couldn't take the truth like straight up. So you maybe have to like, you know, soften it up a little bit and, you know, tell them the truth, like they basically beat around the bush, right?
Yeah.
A little bit. But where it really separates from management and a rugby league coach or like a coach in general is that a coach is much closer to their players and you deal with them on a much more personal level. In a normal business, I don't really think that there's many managers that go out of their way to hear about their childhood or hear about issues they're having with their families and stuff.
Mm.
But it's definitely something that is very important as a coach, because that can have hugely negative effect on your team if a player is secretly dealing with these issues, because that can change the vibe of the entire team. And as we spoke about earlier, the vibe is like almost everything in a team. And if the vibe changes, then you know the team is going to perform poorly, and it's all because of a reason that you don't know. So you kind of have to know these players on a deeper level.
Yeah,
and you have to. You have to basically like rambling a bit around, but like that was one of the most difficult things for me as a coach and as a person like coming into coaching, was that I had to figure out that me being emotional vulnerable with the players is necessary. Like I can't be private and cold, because then they won't open up ever. And as someone who's never really been that like emotional in general, I wouldn't say I'm an emotional person. I had to like teach myself to be emotional and understand people on an emotional level that I never had to do before. And that is definitely been one of the biggest challenges I've had to do, like teach these guys, especially because it's guys that has grown up with dads who've, you know, it's like me, they don't have emotions. Like teach them that emotions is not a bad thing, and you know, give them my own story and give them, you know, like make myself vulnerable to these guys for them to understand they can be vulnerable with me. Like that has been extremely difficult for me, but I think it's necessary, and I hope every coach out there is doing it, because we should help these guys, give them a space to be emotional. And for someone that doesn't know their friends, doesn't know their family, they're not going to be bullied because they're emotional. Like I'm not going to call their mom and be like, yo, you know what, your kid cried today, you know, like I'm not going to do this. Like I'm just going to keep it to myself and help them deal with whatever I can help them with. And I truly hope that every team has that out there. And I hope that every, you know, person out there has this kind of help somewhere. Because, yeah, again, I think it's definitely something that I wish I had in my early stage of my career. Because I think it could have solved a lot of arguments. I think it could have helped me evolve and mature much faster as well. But yeah.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, I went on a bit of a ramble.
No, don't worry. We can make that into a 9-page quote, that what you just said.
So exactly.
Don't worry about it. That was awesome. I really appreciate that. You know, it's hard to – I definitely sort of understand and appreciate what you're saying. It's definitely hard for someone to have an emotional response but also feel emotionally safe, especially with if it's in an environment that is so high pressure. Execution is everything and perfection is everything, to suddenly being able to feel vulnerable and being able to open up about your feelings and what that means, you know, it's no common sort of, it's a pretty common thing that we talk about, you know, sort of men and men's mental health and sort of there almost is that sort of stigma that, you know, a guy can't cry or a guy can't feel upset or whatever that may be based on whatever external situations are happening internally. And so I think it's important, and our role as a coach is to be able to channel that but also unlock that and help the player sort of understand that underlying motivation towards being who they want to be, where they are now and where they need to go. And I think that it is a stepping stone in regards to progress, and it is sort of something that doesn't have a finite date as well. You can't be like, in 6 months' time, you're going to be this person, because that's just not true. You don't know. Mm-hmm. They might be that person next week, or they might be that person in 2 years' time. So I think it's important to sort of understand that it is very much an ongoing process. And I know frequent members of MindClickers will love this, but I usually have a metaphor for this, and it's sort of like a train on the tracks. You know, a train sort of has a final destination. It has like maybe the final destination is maybe, you know, you as a player, you want to win worlds. So that's your final destination. But the train has to have multiple different stops along the way. It can't just go all the way. And sometimes the train's going to come off the tracks, right? Sometimes the train might go in a different direction. It might deter. It might be delivering coal to another town, right? But the thing is, the most important thing is that the train remains on the tracks when it can. And there's this sort of notion that you are progressing, you are sort of channeling towards it. Maybe 1 week you're really progressing towards who you want to be, you know, really fast. Maybe some week you see nothing. Maybe sometimes you regress, right? But I think it's important to sort of stick with that and sort of understand that it is a process, and it is a process that everyone's going through. You know, you're not the only person sort of in that position.
Yeah, the only issue I have with that metaphor is the destination. Because right. I don't believe in destinations, and I think that deep down people don't really believe in destinations, like in goals,
right?
Because goals change all the time.
That's true.
Like when I started working out, right? Like I wanted to get a bit more fit. Then I got a bit more fit. I didn't even necessarily reach my goal, and I was like, okay, I want to get massive.
It's true.
And then
yeah.
You know, then on my way to getting massive, I was like, okay, I want to bench 100 kg. You know, I want to feel those two plates on the bar. Like,
yeah,
I just think the goals change all the time. And I think that people are a bit too obsessed with goals in general, because I don't think you can talk to anyone that has had a goal and then like reached it like fully, like without having set other goals in the meantime. Like if I tomorrow I decide I want to win worlds, I want to coach a team that win worlds, right? That will change 100 times before I actually win worlds. Like it would be like, okay, maybe first I should win a regional. So let's just focus on this one regional.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it would be cool to win back-to-back regionals then. So that's my new goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you can have like a drive. But that's the difference. Is that I wouldn't really say it's a goal. I would say that it's like what drives you. It's like what you're aiming for. I don't think that it's such. I'm basically just describing
it's difficult.
A goal now, but it's like this. There's an end destination to, like, there's a goal, but your goal is going to change 100 times before you actually reach that goal. And most of the time you won't even reach that goal.
Yeah.
Unless you're setting the bar too low for yourself.
Mm.
Like I remember when I was younger, like one guy that had a huge influence on me, and it's not like I want to be controversial or anything on this show, but like one guy that had a huge influence on me was Jordan Peterson, because I found him when I was like 18, 19 or whatever.
Mm.
And I've read his book and everything, and I forgot where I was going with this. He said something about like goals. Like he said something about like people underestimating themselves.
Mm.
And they often do. Like they often underestimate how much they can actually achieve if they go for it. And I think having realistic goals is important, but it's also important to have big goals, you know, like maybe a bit unrealistic goals. Like me saying that I want to win Worlds this season is, it might be unrealistic, right? Because like my team is not in a great, like it's not like we're dominating EU and it's not like it looks like we're going to win Worlds. So it might be unrealistic. But at the end of the day, like I think basically where I'm going with all this, okay, is that the destination, I don't fully believe in the destination because it changes so much. Like the destination, like if you get on a train and it keeps driving on the tracks, I don't believe that it will, like a majority of the time, it will never reach the destination. But the stops that you have on the way will be so valuable to you and so important to your life.
Definitely.
That whatever destination you end up in will still have been worth it.
Yes, for sure. I got you. It's all good. I understand you. I understand you, so, brother.
Like, I just fully believe that it's a very few people that will actually reach their destinations. And I don't think it's like the old niche thing to say is like, it's not about the how you get there or wait, how is it? It's not about
it's about the journey at the end of the day, sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, it's not about, and of my job is because I have an influence on these guys' journey. I don't really care about that destination. I don't really care about my own destination. I just want to impact that journey and make sure that journey is the best and most efficient and most progressive possible. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I wish that more people would look at it like that, because if you just have the end goal in mind at all times, it's going to slow down your progress. It's going to make more stops. It's going to make sure that you derail from the tracks more often. And, you know, like, yeah, just make the journey better, you know, for yourself. Like, literally, the journey is your life. Like, no matter what the goal is, the journey is your life.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that the journey is
worth
the
best it as well.
Journey. Yeah.
Definitely. No, for sure. Holy You can take a drink of water if you want. I'll let you do that.
No, it's okay. But my brain just like went into overdrive or something.
Yeah, well, you're passionate about it, and I can respect that and understand that. So, you know, that's the most important thing. And, you know, you have that sort of underlying understanding of, you know, what it means in that level, which is the most important thing at the end of the day. But I guess as we turn the gas off and roll down the hill towards the end of the episode, you know, we're talking about goals and stuff like that. You know, we always do this little end segment on MindClickers in regards to sort of, you know, maybe people who want to get into the professional scene or people who want to start taking their, you know, career more seriously in terms of Rocket League. You know, what advice would you have towards any of these people sort of thinking about that and just, you know, maybe need that bit of a pick-me-up?
I mean, I think the most important thing is that it's all about yourself. It's never about your teammates. It's never about your coach. It's always about yourself. Like, if I've always told the guys that, like, this metaphor that, or it's not a metaphor, it's more like, if everybody do their part, then nobody can complain. If everybody walk in every single day and focus on themselves 100% and do their part of the team, or if they do their part, then nobody can complain about that. Like, because then everybody, like, the comms will always be good. Like, your gameplay will always be as good as it can that day. Like, the improvement will be as good as it can. Like, and I think that's where most younger players, newer players go wrong, is that they have all these, like, they lose track of what is important. And what is important is themselves. It's not whether your teammate is bad and ranked or whether you have good teammates around you. It's like focusing on yourself and your own improvement always. Making sure that, like, even though you just played the best out of your team, it's still not good enough. You could still have done these things better and better.
Yeah.
And I think as long as people go in with a mindset that they can always improve, like, I that as we spoke about earlier, there is something called talent, and there is hard work, and they coexist, and there is a limit to everybody's talent, and there is a limit to how hard you can work without being stressed. But I think at the end of the day, like, if you focus on yourself always and make sure that you're working as hard as possible on yourself, as much as you can, you know, muster.
Yeah.
Then that's how you'll get the furthest. If you do it any other way, I think that you're just hindering yourself in becoming the greatest version of you.
I print that out and paint it above the setup. Perfectly. Perfectly said, brother. I'm sure that, you know, there's a ton of people that are really going to take that to heart. I think that, you know, the journey and what it means to progress and what it means to become a better player and sort of the inspiration behind that is the most important thing and an underlying variable that, you know, as we said throughout the whole episode, can change. But I think it's about understanding that it can change, and when it does change, that's okay. You know, it's okay that things change. It's okay that stuff happens, because I think a lot of us have this, you know, almost preconceived idea that this is the way it's going to be. Nothing else is going to be different. And that's what I'm going to do. But, you know, something changes, or, you know, there's a fork in the road and you have to adapt. And I think adaptability, you know, especially within, you know, this scene within Rocket League, within esports as a whole, you know, you have to be adaptable. And I think the most adaptable people, you know, can find that success. So
for sure.
I guess that's the perfect example
of it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I was a player that wanted to do as well as possible in Rocket League, compete at the highest level, win everything. Like, I wanted it all, but suddenly I must have realized that I wasn't good enough anymore, right? So my goal changed. Like, the destination, like, the tracks took me somewhere where I never expected it to take me.
Yeah.
And I had to readjust to that. And everybody's going to have to do that in some, you know, regard in their life, not just in Rocket League, but like in their life. Like, anything unexpected can happen at any point. And you got to be able to adapt to that. And that's where I think that always focusing on yourself, like, whether it's inside Rocket League or outside Rocket League, like, there's only so much you can control. Actually, the only thing you can control is yourself. You can't control what other people is going to do and say. You can't control how they're going to play. You can't control, like, you know, your mom. Like, you can't control any of this. All you can control is how you react and how you are, how you behave. Like, that's the only thing you can really do. So that is by none the most important thing to keep in mind, like, on this journey. It's just like, it's all about you and no one else.
Definitely. Oh, phenomenal. I think that sort of encapsulates the episode pretty perfectly. That last little sentence there. But I guess we can sort of turn the gas off there. For everyone listening, you know, and obviously on YouTube, we'll chuck the links down below as well. But for everyone listening, where can we find you on all of your social medias and platforms and get more of that great mind?
I mean, I'm not really that great at using social media in general. I'm old.
Yeah,
I'm about to turn 27. You know,
okay,
I'm old.
Okay. You still got a Nokia, or you actually have an Android?
Yeah. I actually got an Android now, but like, you don't have to go far back for me to have an old phone.
Yeah,
but no, I mean, it's like either Snazky or Snazky 10, and like basically all social media. And don't ask me why Snazky 10. It was just something I picked. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's basically where it is everywhere. I'm not great at social media, but. So you probably won't hear much about it. The best you can do is tune into RCS, or maybe I'll pop up in an interview here and there.
Yeah,
that's probably the best thing you can do. Or tune into everybody else's social media and I'll pop up randomly here and there, like in this episode.
Yeah, love that. And just quickly, what's the where did Snazky come from? What's the origin?
Oh, it's a silly story. So basically my entire family is about my age or older, but I have this one cousin and she is like, what is she now? She's 20. So she's like 7 years younger than me. So she's like fairly behind the rest of us. So when she grew up, she couldn't pronounce my real name is Nikolai.
Yeah.
So she couldn't pronounce that. So she called me Snookle for whatever reason.
Right.
That was what she called me. So I used that for a bit. And then when I was about to start playing League of Legends, me and my friends thought it would be funny to... I mean, I was just going to use that. I was just going to use Snooker because I thought it was a cute story that my cousin was also... She called me and so on.
Yeah.
But then my friend was like, what if we go Snasky? Because when something is snasgood in Danish, it basically means like you're dirty or like filthy or like gross. So then he's like, what if we go Snasky instead? And I was like, yeah, that's pretty funny. It's not that funny, but like when I was like 10, I thought it was pretty funny that my name was basically just like gross or disgusting or whatever. But not many people know this, like that it's close. I think most Danish people probably wouldn't even like
make that correlation. Yeah. No, interesting. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Mine's pretty obvious where mine comes from, but I used to my previous name used to be Bantex. And the reason how I got that was it was in like high school and I didn't have like a pen. And I needed to borrow a pen and the branding of the pen was Bantex. And I'm like, that's a cool name. I'll use that. And that became my Call of Duty name. So, I appreciate you jumping on today, brother, to sort of share this story. And I think that, you know, we've had a really good conversation about quite a few different elements in terms of Rocket League and esports as a whole, from, you know, individual character building to team building and what it means to be a part of a team in terms of relationships, in terms of culture. But then also, you know, jumping back to individuality in terms of being vulnerable. You know, I think that's a big key discussion that a lot of teams, a lot of players sometimes don't have. And I think it's a consideration, you know, to be had. But I really appreciate you jumping on and sort of sharing these thoughts today. And, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people listening can sort of look to you in inspiration and look to be a better player because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be back anytime. Like, as you can tell, like, my brain is just going full drive whenever we're talking about this. Like, I love this subject. I think it's so interesting, and that's why I love being a coach.
Yeah.
So anytime you'll have me back, I'm going to be back here rambling about some crazy goal at the end of the train.
At the end of the train tracks. I'll hold you to it. We'll do a part two. We'll do a part two one day. Sure. Awesome.
For sure.
And for everyone listening, make sure to check out the links in the description below. This has been your host, Lachlan LBP Parker of MindClickers. And thank you for listening. And I'll see you in the next episode. Peace. And we can...